From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Well, class is still in session this week as the FRC tour of Israel continues. Coming up on today's program, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is expected to vote this evening on the nomination of Mike Pompeo for Secretary of State. With the opposition of Republican Senator Rand Paul, it is expected the nomination will fail in committee, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will bring the nomination to the floor where approval is anticipated. We'll talk about that with former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who served on the House Select Committee on Intelligence. We'll also talk about the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel, as today we're actually on the bus going beyond the Green Line. Also, Avi Melamed, former Israeli intelligence official, author of Inside the Middle East, will join us. And later, I'll hop on the bus with General Jerry Boykin, and we'll discuss the Valley of Tears, the 1973 Yom Kippur War, and the ongoing risk of Syria. If you miss anything on your way home, you can check it out later at TonyPerkins.com. Also, lots of resources and information available for you there. In fact, pastors, coming up May 23rd through the 25th, we have our annual Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Conference. And to find out more about how you can be a part of that, go to TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at TPerkins. All right, we are on bus number two, rolling beyond the Green Line. Now, this is an excited crowd. I'm told that bus number two, I'm told it's the best bus. That's what Michelle has told me. And kind of leading this bus, Michelle Bachmann, former congresswoman from Minnesota and a former member of the Select Committee on Intelligence in the House. Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. This bus is having a great time here in Israel. We're all happy to be with FRC.
Well, this is, technology is great. We're actually able to do the radio program rolling down the road on a bus with looking at the hills of Samaria and Judea. It's quite amazing. We're seeing biblical prophecy being fulfilled right before our eyes. But before we get to the fact we're beyond the Green Line and what that means, let's talk about the nomination of Mike Pompeo for Secretary of State. Rand Paul in the Senate Committee on Foreign Affairs says he is going to oppose him. There's only 11 Republicans, 10 Democrats, so with his opposition, that means the nomination this evening, when the vote is cast, will most likely fail, meaning Mitch McConnell will have to take it to the floor. What's the significance of Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State?
Mike Pompeo is a brilliant pick on the part of President Trump. He's brilliant on a number of different levels. Number one, he's highly competent. He graduated first in his class from West Point Military Academy. He served as an officer in the United States military. He understands what it is to be in command. He also understands what it is to run a business. He started from scratch a very successful business. He also served in the United States Congress on the Intelligence Committee, and he's now the director of the CIA. Highly qualified for this position.
And of course, we've already heard this from Israelis. They're very supportive of that nomination, combined with John Bolton. They feel like foreign policy coming out of the White House is going to be much stronger than even what it has been.
That's right, Tony. And the reason for that is because there's a proven record with John Bolton, who's the head of the National Security Council, and there's a proven record with Mike Pompeo. We know what their philosophy is, and it's directly in line with that of the President of the United States, which is pro-Israel.
You're listening to Washington Watch. As I mentioned earlier, we're actually on a bus as a part of the FRC Israel tour. We're going right now into the area of Samaria and Judea. We are seeing the hills of Samaria. This is what's called beyond the Green Line. This is described as the West Bank or Eastern Israel, as I like to describe it. What's significant about this region?
This is the biblical homeland of the Jewish people. This is the land of Benjamin and of Ephraim. all of these cities that we're looking at now on the bus, Tony, are all the cities that we read about as children in the Bible. But it was also the land that God gave specifically to the Jewish people. The boundaries were laid out, and every bit of the land of Judea and Samaria is a part of the land that God has given permanently, forever, to the Jewish people.
But this also, this area, which is so significant to the Jewish and the Christian faiths, this is really the heart of the BDS movement, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. In fact, just in the last 72 hours, we've seen where Durham, North Carolina, the city council there, voting to prohibit their law enforcement from training with Israeli police forces, one of the first municipalities in the country to take a vote, essentially a BDS vote. They're not saying it as such, but it is the same groups that are pushing it.
And it is based upon a lie. There are lies. We're at war. Israel is at war because the Islamic movement has declared war on them. Why? They want to push all the Jews out of the land of Israel so that they can take it over. Part of that strategy is through the war of words, propaganda. And these are lies that are being told, that Israel is an apartheid country, it's a militaristic country. And so now even in Durham, North Carolina, the police force is told that it would be militaristic to train with the Israeli police force, and when in actuality what they're doing is learning techniques on how to deal with terrorism. No one knows better how to deal with terrorism and mass casualties. The American people know that we've had one terrorist incident after another in the United States, including in North Carolina. So it would be prudent for police departments to train with the Israelis, who are the best trained in the world to know how to deal with terrorism.
Well, and I can speak to that from personal experience, having worked with the Israeli forces when it came to anti-terrorists. Back when I worked with the State Department as a contractor, they were some of the best instructors, because you learn by doing. And this isn't a region in the world that is, it's a tough neighborhood. But they keep the people safe, and they keep law, and they keep order, and they respect human rights. This is a real twisting of the human rights record when you look at who is really abusing rights. I believe as Christians, and we talked about this last night at our gathering, as Christians, we love the Jewish people, we love Israel, we love the Palestinian people. We love all people, because everyone is created in the image of God, and Jesus died for the world. That includes everybody. But when you look at governments, I don't see the Israeli government and authorities violating human rights. I see that more from the Palestinian Authority.
Oh, 100%. The freest place for a woman in the Middle East is to be in Israel, and that's for Arab women. They have more rights and more freedoms in Israel than anywhere else. I invite all of your listeners to come on one of these FRC trips to Israel, and you will see firsthand for yourself, Israel is a first world country. It is the freest place in the Middle East, and we want to make sure that that freedom is enjoyed all across the Middle East. Unfortunately, a lot of the elites, like in the Palestinian Authority, see the world in a very different way. And for them to keep positions of power, they have to come up with a scapegoat. And the scapegoat is always Israel. But when you see the facts on the ground, you learn that the situation is completely opposite. This is the freest, most productive, most forward-looking area. And as you said, human rights are enforced here by the Supreme Court, by the Knesset. And people might not realize Arabs serve in the Knesset. They're allowed to run for office as well. That's freedom. As opposed to now that we are within this area known as the West Bank, Judea, Samaria, in this particular area, we will see signs. For instance, if we come up to the town of Nablus, there will be a sign that says, "No Jews allowed." There is no place like that in Israel that's comparable, but you will see that here. This is an apartheid state in the Palestinian Authority. It is not in Israel. And again, it's because this is a war of words through propaganda.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Again, we've taken our studio on the road, so it may sound a little different than normal. You heard a few bumps on the side of the road back there. That was not me nodding off in the studio. We are on the road in Israel, actually looking out the windows at the hills of Samaria that are green and lush, and we're seeing, again, biblical prophecy. Look at Jeremiah 31. By the way, before I continue with Michelle, I encourage you to check out the website, TonyPerkins.com, and I'm going to have a map up there that shows Israel in what's called the Green Line. Now, what's significant about that is that's the 1967 borders. Now, we heard during the last administration, the Barack Obama administration, of pulling back and recognizing those 1967 borders. When you look at the map in the Green Line that's on there, you begin to understand how difficult it would be for Israel to defend its homeland with such boundaries. And Michelle, I want to ask you about that, this continued push to try to delegitimize Israel, these areas that are called settlements. We're on our way to Ariel, which is a thriving community with a hospital, university, industrial park. It's called a settlement. This is one of the areas that could potentially be on the chopping block.
Well, that's right, because again, remember, at the end of the day, the purpose of the Palestinian Authority is to drive every Jew out of Israel. So there is no end game that sees any Jew staying in this land called Israel. Well, that's never going to happen. The Jewish people are here to stay forever. The Bible tells us that, but the political government of Israel says that. We're not going anywhere. So this is a figment of the Palestinian Authority's imagination to think they're actually going to push the Jews away. And again, as you said rightly, this is all about illegitimacy. And that's why one of the wisest things President Trump could have done is to establish the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, because that says that Jerusalem is legitimately the capital of Israel. And again, the Palestinians don't want that. They don't want to see, because they say the Jews have no right to Jerusalem. They have no right to 1 inch of this square inch of land. This land has been under contention for over 2,000 years, so we shouldn't be surprised about that. The important thing is to get the facts about Israel. This land, Israel won in the 1967 war. They have won it. No one gave this land to Israel. This is land that they have earned on their own. They've won wars. It would be, for instance, for our listeners, if we gave California and Texas back to Mexico or Arizona, that we would still be fighting that war. Well, the Palestinians lost the war in 1967, but they won't take no for an answer. And so they think because they lost it in war, they should be able to win it through the war of words and the war of diplomacy. Why in the world should Israel give back this land? This is their land. And so they are legitimately staking their claim on land that they have won.
Well, and I want one slight modification there, and I know you meant this. It was given to them by God.
Amen.
That's right. And so it is their land, but they've had the fight to keep it. Michelle Bachmann, thanks so much for joining me today on radio, and thanks for joining us on this tour of Israel.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Right, bus number two?
Yay!
All right, folks, as I mentioned, we are continuing our program this week from Israel. Class is still in session. Coming up here on Washington Watch, Avi Melamed is going to join me inside the Middle East, a fascinating look at connecting all of the dots. And so we're going to try to download from him his insight as a former Israeli intelligence official and lecturer. So we're going to be talking with him. And then I'm going to jump on bus number four, I think, is General Boykin. We put him on the last bus.
No, be nice.
And so we're going to be talking about the 1973 Yom Kippur War in the Valley of Tears. General Boykin actually spending time with the Israeli Defense Forces, and we visited there and looked over that battlefield, and he's going to give us more description of that and the threat that Syria may still pose. So that's coming up here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're coming back with more right after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number 800-225-4008 or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you and may God bless the United States of America.
Hey, I'm back. I brought food. What's the score?
98%.
What?
My congressman got a 98% on the Family Research Council Action Scorecard.
You are such a nerd.
Family Research Council Action created a new scorecard to help others understand how well their member of Congress is doing on the things that are important to you. Like how your representatives voted on taxpayer funding for abortion, repealing and replacing Obamacare, the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and other important legislation relating to faith, family, and freedom.
Really? I barely know my congressman. Let me look this up. How do I get the info on this?
Go to frcaction.org/scorecard. Once you find out how your representative voted on these issues, you should let them know your thoughts and keep them accountable. Whoa, you're typing it all wrong. It's frcaction.org/scorecard.
Okay, I got it now. I'll keep an eye for my representatives for any foul balls.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique. Not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it? It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us as we continue our trip throughout Israel. Joining me now is an author. I've read his book, fascinating book, very insightful. The book is entitled Inside the Middle East, Making Sense of the Most Dangerous and Complicated Region of the World. And I've actually never read a book that is so concise and lays it out. It goes back to about 700 AD, laying out kind of the dynamics that has brought about the current situation in the Middle East. He is a native of Jerusalem, a former Israeli intelligence official. He is an author, educator, and strategic intelligence analyst. And we are so glad to have Avi Melamed with us. Avi, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Thank you very much.
Your book, I mentioned, the Inside the Middle East, Making Sense of the Most Dangerous and Complicated Region of the World. I read it. I'm not an intelligence expert. It appears that you wrote this book for the average person to understand what is happening in the Middle East.
That is very correct, Tony. I believe there is a need, and was particularly in the West and the United States, to elaborate the knowledge about the Middle East that goes beyond the shallow, flat media headlines, and I think that people really need that knowledge.
I mean, this is really a complex mixture here in the Middle East, and one of the things that you write about, which makes perfect sense now, is the Iran and the axis of resistance here in the Middle East. Explain that to our listeners.
The Axis of Resistance is a network of agents and proxies nurtured or developed by the Iranian mullah regime to basically justify the expansion policy of the mullah regime in the different parts of the Middle East. It is all being done under the banner of eliminating the State of Israel, a banner and a slogan that unfortunately speaks to different people in the region. The mullah regime, unfortunately, as of now, was very skillfully taking advantage of that to expand its influence, for example, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Gaza Strip and other places. This is one of the most challenging situations in the Middle East.
And we see this actively playing out in Syria, right here on the Israeli border.
Definitely. The war in Syria is way beyond the civil war. It's portrayed in the Western media. It's actually a war that basically brings together to the fight Iran on the one hand and the axis of resistance that complies with Iran, together with Russia and Assad. And on the other hand, we have Arab-Syrian Sunni forces that are actually trying to end the Iranian occupation and the Syrian and the Russian occupation of Syria.
So what is in Syria, the outcome of this? What's in it for Iran and what is in it for Russia?
For Iran, it will enable Iran to continue the attempts to create the strangling loop around Israel next. Iran started by doing that in Lebanon vis-a-vis the Hezbollah, through the Hezbollah in Gaza Strip, through the Hamas and Islamic Jihad. So for the Iranian regime, that will be another step to try and to accomplish what they are basically saying all the time. The Mullah regime says the state of Israel will cease to exist in 25 years from now. This is a master plan. This is an orchestrated plan. So in that context, Syria is an enormously significant component for the Mullah's regime. For Russia, Syria provides great benefits. Putin is the big winner as of now in Syria because in a relatively speaking small investment, he got great cards to play with. He has an aerial base in Syria. He has a naval base in Syria. He has an access to the huge gas reservoirs in the eastern basin of the Mediterranean. He can use the Syrian story as a pressure card against the U.S. and the West in the context of the negotiations over Ukraine, Eastern Europe, Central Europe. As far as Putin is concerned, his presence in Syria that has been done in a small investment is a great dividend.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Avi Melamed, my guest. All right, so we understand Iran, Russia, their motivation there. When we see the future for Israel, you're actually not alone in your opposition to Iran because you have other Arab countries that are concerned about the aggressive nature of Iran.
That is very accurate, Tony. In fact, what we see today is because of this huge Iranian-Arab power struggle that rocks and shakes the Middle East to its core. It's not only Syria, it's Lebanon, it's Iraq, it's the Gulf area, it's Yemen, it's the Gaza Strip, it's the Iranian nuclear deal. The outcome of that is that major Arab states players like Saudi Arabia, like the Gulf states, like Egypt, like Jordan, actually look today at Israel as a strategic asset that is very vital to their own interest, and particularly in the context of the threat and the challenge they are facing because of the Mullah's regime in Tehran.
So, Avi, what role does America play in this, in supporting, standing with the strategic nature of our relationship with Israel?
To sum it up, Tony, I would say something like that. During the time of the Obama's administration, the overall look at the Middle East, not only in Israel, was that the United States is no longer a valid player in the Middle East. That is now changed because under the Trump administration, all factors in the Middle East basically looks once again at the United States as a very significant player that has to be listened to. And this is the major difference.
Are there openings right now that we see in other countries here in the Middle East that could become strategic partners with Israel?
Definitely. We could see already, it's no longer a secret, the growing relationship between Israel and Saudi Arabia, the tight cooperation between Israel and Egypt, mostly around security issues and economic issues. The same applies for Israeli-Jordanian relationship. Definitely you could see these growing connections.
Avi Melamed, how can folks find a copy of your book, Inside the Middle East, Making Sense of the Most Dangerous and Complicated Region of the World?
Well, Tony, the book is available at Amazon. It's available in stores. It's also available in audio version, and I'm very welcome people to join and read it.
Well, I think it's a fascinating book, very insightful, very helpful in understanding what is happening here in the Middle East. Avi Melamed, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony, so much for having me. My pleasure.
All right, folks, check it out. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can find out more about how you can learn more about the work that Avi is doing. It's really fascinating. It's it's an easy read, but very, very insightful. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we've got something special. We took we're on the road as we tour around the country. And joining me next, we're going to be talking with our own general, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, about the Golan Heights. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendars for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Mike Huckabee, Paul Ryan, Ben Carson, Steve Scalise, Kellyanne Conway, Kirk Cameron, Laura Ingraham, Dana Loesch, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levine. On September 21st to 23rd, stand with Values Voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the special early bird price, but act fast. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Again, doing a first here, we're doing Washington Watch on a bus in Israel. Never thought I'd be doing radio, standing on a bus with an Israeli bus driver weaving through the hills of Israel. But we had a really exciting day and wanted to share with you some of our experiences. We were on the Golan Heights. Now, I'm sure you've heard of those. The Golan Heights, you've heard of that place, very significant place in the history of Israel. And we're privileged, as you've already heard, on our tour, along with our friends from across the United States who are with us. And by the way, we're on bus number one for this, so let's hear it for bus number one. the best bus, all right, I'll have to say, I'm a little biased. But anyway, we have General Jerry Boykin with us, and in fact, he was stationed here in Israel with the Israeli Defense Forces and has firsthand experience. In fact, had some friends that were in the 1967 battle at the Golan Heights, and he took our group kind of through this, explaining how the battle worked and how significant it was and how really outnumbered the Israeli forces were. So joining me now again on Washington Watch is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council and a founding member of the Army's Delta Force. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you, and this is a wonderful day in Israel.
Well, and those are some nice shorts you got on there, General. A little cold up there on the Golan Heights. But let's talk about, in all seriousness, let's talk about the significance of the 1967 battle there on the Golan Heights.
Yeah, well, the 67 war, or the Six-Day War, was very significant because that's when Israel actually came to control the Golan Heights. Syria attacked across the Golan Heights. The IDF, or the Israeli Defense Force, counterattacked. And when they counterattacked, they pushed them all the way back across the Syrian border. And the Golan Heights was under Israeli control from that point on.
Let's talk about the balance here, or the imbalance, I should say, where the Israeli forces, unlike today, Syria was a significant threat from a standpoint of militarily. They had a lot to put on the battlefield compared to the Israelis.
Yeah, that's right. They were a huge threat, and that was before Bashar al-Assad came to power. His father, Hafez al-Assad, was there as the leader of Syria, and he had a very formidable army, as a matter of fact, and what he brought to the 67 war was just not only tens of thousands of soldiers, but hundreds of tanks, modern tanks, Russian tanks for that matter, and they fully intended to go all the way to Tel Aviv. And if you look at the strategic value of the Golan Heights, if you get a running start and you get all the way to the base of the Golan Heights, you're almost in Tel Aviv, which at one point was the capital of Israel. So it was very strategic, and the Israelis were totally outnumbered. But look, you can only say by miracle, by the blessings of God, they counterattacked and pushed the Syrians off the Golan Heights and then took control of the Golan Heights.
So since 1973, when this battle took place, what has been the significance of that region, and is it still an area of vulnerability?
Well, you mentioned 73. The 67 was when they took it, and then 73, they had to hold it. And that was the Yom Kippur War, and that actually lasted about 16 days. But the battle that we looked at today, the Battle of Tears, right up on the Syrian border, was actually over in 4 days. But they had to really sacrifice to win that battle up there in what we call the Battle of Tears, because as you saw today, there's a monument there to the dead, the Israeli dead. And they paid a huge price for that, not only in materiel, but in the lives of Israeli soldiers. But that's the point. This was a matter of fighting for their survival. And they fought courageously, and they sacrificed a lot of people up there to be able to hold on to the Golan Heights, because it is strategically very important. It is strategically important because it is what we call the strategic high ground. You know, as you're a military person as well, and you know how important the high ground is. So when you control the high ground, for the most part, you dominate the battlefield. When you lose the high ground, you're at a disadvantage. And that is strategic in terms of the Israelis needing to hold on to it to ensure that the Syrians don't come across, get a rolling start, and wind up in Tel Aviv.
Is Syria still a threat to Israel?
Syria is less of a threat to Israel right now. And the reason is because there's a civil war going on in Syria. The Syrian leadership is distracted, and they are much less of a threat than they were up till about 3 years ago when the Syrian civil war started.
All right, General, keep your seat. Don't go anywhere because the bus hadn't stopped, for one. But we're going to come back with more Washington Watch right after this, and we're going to be taking questions from our rolling audience here on Washington Watch as we broadcast here from Israel. So, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more of this special rolling edition of Washington Watch here in Israel. So we're going to be coming right back. In the meantime, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, don't go away. We're coming right back after this.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hi there, let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org.
Hey, I'm back. I brought food. What's the score?
98%.
What?
My congressman got a 98% on the Family Research Council Action scorecard.
You are such a nerd.
Family Research Council Action created a new scorecard to help others understand how well their member of Congress is doing on the things that are important to you. Like how your representatives voted on taxpayer funding for abortion, repealing and replacing Obamacare, the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and other important legislation relating to faith, family, and freedom.
Really? I barely know my congressman. Let me look this up. How do I get the info on this?
Go to frcaction.org/scorecard. Once you find out how your representative voted on these issues, you should let them know your thoughts and keep them accountable. Whoa, you're typing it all wrong. It's frcaction.org/scorecard.
Okay, I got it now. I'll keep an eye for my representatives for any foul balls.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. By the way, pastors, if you're listening, let me remind you, coming up May the 23rd through the 25th, we have our Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Conference in Washington, D.C. This will be our 15th annual Pastors Conference, and this is an event you really don't want to miss. If you're a pastor, this is the place to be. To find out more about how you can be a part of the Watchman on the Wall outreach, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, as I mentioned earlier in the previous segment, we're on a bus in Israel. This is a first for us. We're actually recording as we're rolling. We were at the Golan Heights earlier today, where it was the site of the 1967 war with Syria between Israel, a big tank battle that took place there. General Jerry Boykin, my guest. And General, we've got some correspondence coming in from the back of the bus. And we're going to go to some questions now. This comes from Dee in Louisiana. How do you believe our nation would react to an attack against Israel? Now, put that in context, and this was in your remarks as you talked there at the Valley of Tears, that the United States had sent word to Israel that we don't want to see you do a preemptive strike, but if you're attacked, we will come to your aid. How do you think America will react now, especially under the Trump administration?
Yeah, to be perfectly clear, that was the position of the administration in 1973 during the Yom Kippur War. You have to absorb the first attack, and then we'll come to your rescue. Now, what would we do today? I think with Donald Trump in office, I don't think there is any questions that we would give the Israelis whatever they wanted, and we would give them diplomatic cover at the United Nations, but I think we would we would pour resources into here.
We also see that even in recent weeks, sorry, I got my dates wrong earlier, but in the recent weeks, we've seen that the Israelis have been taking more aggressive preemptive strikes, even with American support.
Yeah, that's right. Look, the Israelis are coming, you know, they're coming to a crunch point here. And when you look at what's going on in Iran with regards to, you know, the Iranians gaining a nuclear weapon plus supporting Hezbollah, I think the Israelis realize that they've got to reduce the threat to themselves. And one of the ways that they do that is they take care of what they can take care of on a day-to-day basis, which is Hamas and Hezbollah, both of which are either right on their borders or actually inside of Israel. And I think that they are they're doing all they can to take care of those threats, because what they're really worried about is the existential threat of Iran as they get a nuclear weapon.
This comes from Leno in Arizona. What military presence does the U.S. have in this region now? How close is it to here to Israel?
Yeah, after 9/11, we actually put a general officer in here in Israel to help coordinate and deconflict activities in this part of the world. The United States only has people stationed here in the United Nations. So they're UN observers, but they don't station military units here. I was here previously for a special purpose, but they don't station units here. We have in the past, though, especially right after 9/11, we put Patriot units here to give the Israelis an added margin of air defense protection. And we've done that kind of thing, but today we really don't have any troop units stationed here.
Now, we have not yet discuss this on our tour. In fact, that's coming up this next week. We'll have a special presentation on America or Israeli missile defense, known as the Iron Dome, and their technology, supported by the United States, have a pretty effective system of defense against incoming rockets and now even missiles that would come into this area.
No, that's exactly right. And by the way, the United States has helped them not only to develop that, but to fund that Iron Dome system. And I'm envious because you've actually seen that system work. I've been briefed on it, but you've seen it work in one of your previous trips over here, and it's very effective, but it's not 100%.
Yeah, well, it worked the time I was here, and we were going to try to line that up again, but we figured you guys probably wouldn't want it. Here is a question from Ron in Washington. In the last war with Lebanon, I believe the news media portrayed it as a stalemate. Is that accurate, or did Israel accomplish their necessary goals of sufficiently reducing Hezbollah's effectiveness for future threats?
Yeah, this one could be debated all the rest of the afternoon. But here's the reality. The Israelis made some very bad decisions regarding that conflict in South Lebanon. And what they tried to do was an age-old problem. They tried to win it with air power alone. They did not want to put boots on the ground. I mean, they're concerned about casualties just like we are. But that was a huge mistake, because you do not win wars from the air. You just simply don't. You've got to put boots on the ground. By the time they finally decided they had to send in ground forces, they'd already taken some significant losses, but you know, they put ground forces in, and eventually they were able to clean out some of those cities. Now, it's also important to remember, though, they pulled out right away. I mean, they evacuated just as soon as they were finished. Hezbollah now has somewhere between 40 and 60,000 rockets and missiles in South Lebanon. And so I would say a stalemate may actually be a kind way to put it, because it was not a clear IDF victory.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. As I mentioned earlier, we are broadcasting from Israel. In fact, on our tour bus, as we are with about 200 of our friends and supporters, spending about 10 days looking at some of the key biblical sites here in Israel, as well as meeting with political, spiritual, or religious leaders here to kind of take in the geopolitical environment here in the Middle East currently. And in general, Boykin, coming up to modern day, here's a question from Chad in Louisiana. Why is Bashar al-Assad using chemical weapons on his own people?
Yeah, well, first of all, Bashar al-Assad is in a fight to the death as well. He has no place to go, and probably the only country that would give him asylum would be Russia. So his back's against the wall. I think that he thought that he could do that and get away with it because Russia was going to protect him. And keep in mind this, and this is a very important issue. It was the Russians who told us a couple of years ago under the Obama administration that they were taking control of all of the chemical weapons in Bashar al-Assad's arsenal. Okay, now he's using chemical weapons. This is the second time he's used chemical weapons against his own people. Well, either the Russians lied to us or they didn't know what they were talking about. I'd say they lied to us. He kept his weapons of mass destruction, read that as chemical, and he's using them now against his own people because he is his back is against the wall, and this is all or nothing for him. If he doesn't stop this insurgency inside Syria, he is either a dead man or a man on the run for the rest of his life.
Now, he has the backing of the mullahs in Iran, the Iranian government supporting him, funding him. The Russians are supporting them with military material and such. Are we looking at a protracted, almost surrogate war with obviously the United States weighing in against the Russian position in Syria? How long could this go on?
Well, I think it's probably been going on now for at least 3 years since the Arab Spring spread into Syria. And the insurgency there started, but I think this could go on for a very long time. And look, Russia and Iran have different agendas there. The Iranians want a belt of Shias all the way from Iran across to the Mediterranean. The Russians actually want warm water ports. They have Tartus. They want an airfield where they can stage, where they can move things freely. And they want to be able to dominate that part of the world, not only because they just want to be able to secure their southern border, but they also want the oil that's there. And now they're discovering more and more natural gas and oil in that part of the world, and that is one of the key incentives for the Russians to stay there and continue to do what they're doing.
2 weeks ago, President Trump had signaled that maybe American troops, there's just a small contingency there working with our allied forces there in Syria, that they may pull out. That appears to be, he's rethinking that position after the chemical attacks there. Could we see an increased presence of the United States in Syria?
We could, but I kind of doubt it. I mean, to do what? To do what now? I think that what we have there is 2,000 people. They have air support available to them if they are threatened. And remember, they've already killed about 200 Russians in there. The Russians said they were contractors. But there was an attack on their base, and they responded and went in heavily with air power and allegedly killed about 200 Russians. So I think that I don't think we're going to see much of an increase in that area especially.
All right, General, here's a question from Diane in Arizona. How strong is Israel's army and air force, and how prepared are they for any attacks that might come from Syria or other neighbors?
Well, they're strong. And look, they put a lot of money into their defense, and we give them a lot of money too, specifically to defend themselves. But they have a huge advantage on us technologically because they are state-of-the-art technology, and they've already, as soon as they get that technology, they immediately start to put it onto their tanks and their airplanes and that type of thing. Their ground forces are really, I think, in many ways equal to any ground force because they are They're led well, and they have good modern equipment. And then finally, I'll say something I said on your program a few days ago, and that is that they have the best intelligence in the world. And that intelligence gives them a real edge when it comes to knowing what their adversaries are up to and then being able to defeat them.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, my guest. General Jerry Boykin, retired from the United States Army for 36 and a half years and executive vice president here at the Family Research Council. And we're doing a first here, General. We're doing radio on the road, literally rolling down the highways and mountains of Israel. I know you've been here. You actually lived here for quite some time when you were back in the Army, but you've been with us now on a couple of tours as we have come here. What to you is most significant about visiting, from your perspective now of visiting Israel and on these tours? What's most significant to you?
Well, I think what's most significant is having the opportunity to bring Americans here and help them to understand what it's like to be an Israeli, to live under the threat that at any moment somebody is going to get on a bus with your children and blow that bus up, or somebody's going to fire a missile or a rocket that's going to come through your roof. I think that it's a great privilege to be able to come here with people that love the Lord and love Israel and help them to understand what this country's up against. You know, we had some speakers last night at one of our dinners that talked about the propaganda, the fake news that is so prevalent here, which gives you such a skewed understanding and impression of Israel and the Jewish people. So being able to set the record straight and let people really understand what this country is about and what it's like to be an Israeli, I think is a real privilege, and I think that's what's most significant to me.
Well, that's a great segue to what will probably be our last question from Jim in California, where he says, do you foresee any circumstances where Syria and Iran would reach a genuine peace with Israel? Now, I put that in the context of Egypt. Of course, they had a historic peace agreement with Israel, and now with President el-Sisi in Egypt literally wanting to have a closer relationship with the United States and with Israel, could be a model for, once again, for a better relationship. Do we foresee, or do you foresee, at least a short-term peace here in the Middle East? Is it possible?
I don't think so. I think that Israel is going to be under pressure until Christ returns, quite frankly. They are at peace with Jordan and Egypt, but I don't think you'll see a general peace in this part of the world.
So it's more of just a kind of a managed coexistence.
Yes.
But I do think we see allies emerging from time to time, and I guess it kind of changes. But Egypt obviously presenting one of those options. And of course, we've talked a lot about this, and we're not going to be able to talk about it because we're about out of time. But religious freedom in the United States, promoting that as a priority in our foreign policy, is one way to bring greater stability in this part of the region. Well, General, I want to thank you once again for joining us on Washington Watch, and also for joining us on this trip, and your insights today were very, very helpful in helping us understand this. Well, folks, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, and those of you on the bus, you didn't have a choice. You were already on the bus, but thank you as well for joining us. And until next time, I encourage you to listen to the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.